Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. And if you're looking for a good book to read, I've got a one for you to consider here. You're going to want to consider the latest novel from our guest, Bill Stokes, with us in the studio today to talk about his latest book. It's a historical fiction set during World War II, set right here in Wisconsin. And I really enjoyed reading it. Bill has been a hero of mine, frankly, my whole life. He's a wonderful writer, and I've followed his work for literally my whole reading life. And as he wrote for many newspapers, and then subsequently also written a number of books, at least a half a dozen books. So we're talking with him today about his newly released book. It's called Margaret's War. And set right here in actually northern Wisconsin. And it was a real page-turner for me. I really enjoyed it a lot. And I hope you'll join in with your own questions or comments. Maybe you've got some questions or comments for Bill as a writer. Maybe you have some questions about the book itself. It has to do with POWs, German POWs, who were literally sent to Wisconsin, and many of them. And so that they play a part in the book, and there are it's a kind of a coming-of-age book as well. So we'll talk all about it and certainly take your questions and comments as we move along today. The number to call is 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at ideas@wpr.org. And Bill Stokes, welcome. Great to have you with us.
Thank you, Larry. Pleasure to be here.
You know, I have to unfortunately tell you that you are to blame for the ice in my driveway, because last Saturday it was a little bit warm and there was ice out there and it was breakable. But before I started on it, I picked up your book and I started to read the book, and I wound up reading the book all day long and into the evening, and the ice never got chipped away.
Well, your priorities are in the right place, really.
Oh, it was so much fun to read about Margaret's War. And this, you know, you're not as young as you used to be.
I'm not, really. I am as old as a Model A Ford. Do you know the last year they were made?
No, I don't.
I hate to admit it, but it was 1931.
Oh, my gosh. God.
Yeah, there aren't many of those on the road yet.
Okay. Well, it's good to know that you're still on the road.
Thank you.
Good for you to know it, too, I bet.
Yes, indeed.
Well, how long is this? There are a lot of themes in this book.
There are. It was practically a lifelong project. Every journalist thinks, you know, he has a potential for being a great novelist, and so you work at that ridiculous presumption. But this was some of the writing in this book goes way back to when I was here at the university in the 50s, for gosh sakes. I took a lot of creative writing courses, but it was a project that I just lived with and kept revising and worked with some professionals along the way, and I finally got it to where I felt it needed to see the light of day while I could still see the light of day. So that's it's published by a small Milwaukee publisher who is doing a great job. And I'm just delighted that the story is finally out there. It's the research was extensive, long term, but it was always fun. I just really enjoyed the reading and interviewing people who could talk to me about the prisoners. And this particular part of World War II got very little attention. It was ignored by history, by people at the time because they were busy with other things. And once the war was over, the attention went to other things, and it just sort of got forgotten. But it was a very traumatic era in on the home front. It was the first occasion of people in Wisconsin who had been isolated from this horrible war, except to contribute their sons, and finally, through this prisoner circumstance, they were face to face with the enemy, the people, the companions at least of the people who killed their sons. It was a really emotional thing for many people, particularly Gold Star mothers, and it. So the writing of it was easy in your imagination of the feelings of those people who were.
So you would have been. You would have been of an age when that occurred.
That's right. I was 14, and my narrator in the book is 15.
15, yeah.
And yes, I remember the prisoners in my town. In the book is Oxbow. It's modeled after my hometown of Barron. Mm-hmm. And there were about 200. Prisoners in Barron for 2 or 3 months in 44 and 45, and so I remember them.
Yeah, and so that's probably where the idea for started. Of course, you were only 14, so you probably weren't thinking about writing a book then.
No, I was thinking about being left out of the war, and that. That was kind of the theme of the book.
Yeah, and we've got Billy is there's actually maybe five or six people that play a big role in the book, but certainly Billy and Margaret and another guy called Cy Butler. But Billy was 15, and he was kind of upset that he didn't have a chance to go and fight.
That's was the overriding situation for Billy, and it's what drove him to try to get into it by other means. And once the prisoners were there, this was a rare opportunity.
Yeah, a rare opportunity. How did you find the voice for that? I mean, you're right. Like I certainly remember some of my own thoughts when I was that age, and I thought, man, he's capturing what I think a young man at that time would have thought.
Well, that was one of the really fun things of doing the book, is to go back and try to recover some of what you were at 15. It can be embarrassing, and it was an interesting experience. If you really look at yourself, or try to look at yourself at that early time, I think everybody should do it. It's an interesting experience. One of the problems in using a 15-year-old narrator is to keep him 15 and not get him 16, 17, where he starts talking and thinking too old. So during the writing, I had a big figure 15 right in front of my computer or typewriter, whatever I was using.
And you kept it. You were able to do it. Bill Stokes, our guest today, he has authored a number of books, half a dozen books at least, wrote for three or four newspapers. I actually think it was four newspapers over his time, including the, I know, the Wisconsin State Journal, where I followed him, and the Milwaukee Journal, and the Chicago Tribune. I think you had one earlier, maybe.
Stevens Point Stevens Daily Point. Journal. I got my first job thanks to Ed Gein.
All right. How did you get your first job because of Ed Gein?
Well, the Ed Gein story broke in November of 1957, and I was at the university ready to get a job. And when the story broke up in the Plainfield area, Quincy Dadisman was the reporter at the Stevens Point Daily Journal. And he did such an outstanding job of covering that story for the Wire Service that he got an offer of a job with the Milwaukee Sentinel. Therefore, there was an opening in Stevens Point thanks to Ed Gein.
that's a great story. Well, I remember many of your stories, and maybe we can talk about some of those too. I remember a story you wrote about spending a night, you slept out overnight in a deer yard in northern Wisconsin. You remember that story?
Oh, indeed.
Well, it's a great story, and so too is his new book. It's called Margaret's War, and we're going to get into some more detail about the book and about Bill and his writing and a bit about his life, too. He's been around a long time. He's got lots of interesting things to talk about, and I hope you'll join in with your own questions or comments as we move along. You can reach us at 1-800-642-1234, or if you'd like to email us, you could email us at ideas@wpr.org. I'm Larry Mueller. We'll be taking a quick look at the news and weather, find out what else is in store for us here on the Ideas Net, and then we'll be back with Bill, so you stay with us. Thanks for joining us on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here, and I want you to think about this or try and picture this. You live in an isolated small town and maybe in northern Wisconsin. It's disrupted by World War II, and then some prisoners of war, German prisoners of war, come to your community during the war, and they're put to work. They're harvesting crops, peas and such. And you're a 15-year-old boy, and you wish you'd have gone to the war, but you now are suddenly confronted with them, as is everyone else in the community. And that's what this book is about that we're talking about with Bill Stokes. It's called Margaret's War, and Margaret's husband went off to war and is missing, and so the book revolves kind of around that and some plans to maybe affect the war in one way or another, and how it could be done right in your own little community. Bill Stokes, our guest today, great to have him here. His book, again, historical fiction set during World War II in Wisconsin, and it's called Margaret's War. So I'm so pleased to have him with us. And certainly, if you have questions, maybe you have questions about the POWs, or maybe questions about the book, possibly questions about writing as well, I hope you'll join in. Lots to talk about here. The number is 1-800-642-1234, and you can email us at ideas@wpr.org. You know, I've been calling this historical fiction. Is that the proper category? Is that how you look at it?
Yeah, I guess that's one of them. It's a coming of age sort of thing. I think one of the things that I'm really pleased about is that it deals with an issue that is current and it remains so, and that is the disempowerment of women.
Yeah.
Particularly in wartime, the men say hey, we're going to go to war, send us your sons, we're going to kill them, but we'll give you a gold star. And so I think a large part of the theme here is the disempowerment during those times, and what Margaret and Billy and Cy tried to do about it, not consciously, but it becomes a big part of the theme.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. Nancy in Grafton has something for us, so let's go there. Nancy, hi. Thank you for calling.
Well, hello. I grew up on a farm in Marathon County, and there were a lot of those prisoners that came over because there were a lot of German people that lived in our county, and around Hamburg and places, town of Stettin. Well, there was the Fromm brothers up there, and they had a lot of mink ranches or something, and a lot of those people worked there. And the neat thing about it was, heck, everybody knew German up there, it seemed, pretty much, you know, in that area. And another thing is, we had a neighbor. There was a neighbor down the street from our farm, and he was German. And this, I'll never forget this. I was a little girl. I was, you know, in grade school. And he said he would rather take his sons out in the barnyard and shoot and kill them than let them come and fight for the United States, because he was a German. And he had a heck of a good farm, a good living, but he was so angry because he'd rather kill his own sons than let them go and fight for the United States. And I'll never forget that, because I was just a little girl when I heard that. And I thought, wow, you know, you got a heck of a good farm here. You got a good living. But that was the way he felt. But he was still loyal to Germany. But we had a lot of those German people, you know, were good workers. And I'm just so glad that I know that history, because I was part of it when I was a little girl.
Oh, Nancy, thank you so much. You know, a lot of the things she's talking about there kind of strike home in your book, don't they?
Well, indeed. There was a big, big pro-German movement just prior to World War II, as everybody knows, led by the likes of Lindbergh. And that movement did not die when the war started. It was still... The Bund was still active. It kind of went underground, but actually in the 40s, about one third of the Wisconsin population had German heritage, so there was a big connection with these German prisoners.
Did you have a chance, and you know, you did quite a bit of research, and you over a long period of time, did you have a chance to talk to people like Nancy or get their experiences,
yes,
or even talk to former POWs?
Yes, I did. About, maybe 20 years ago, I had the local paper in Barron run an announcement seeking interviews and information, and I got some wonderful reaction from all kinds of people. But one of the really exciting research events was to run across a guy named Pachman, who had a stoneworks business out by Truax Field. He was a former POW. I was excited beyond words when I discovered him. I went out to interview him, and he was sitting at his desk, and he pulled up his pant leg and pointed to a scar on his leg, and he said, "See this wound? I got that. This is my only war wound, and I got it in Barron, Wisconsin." So for somebody researching what I was, this was like striking gold. It was just incredible. What had happened was, he said we were playing soccer, and I was chasing the ball, and I stumbled across a single strand of barbed wire, which was all that enclosed the soccer field. So he was just a really nice guy and a wonderful resource. his story was interesting. He was, after the war, he was sent back, as all of them were. They had to go back. And many, many of them were short-stopped by France and more or less enslaved in various jobs, including, in Kurt Pachman's case, he was assigned to a farmer who was mean and didn't treat him right. And he said, I was there for 2 years. It looked like it was going to last forever. And one day I just walked back to Germany. But this happened to thousands and thousands of the prisoners that were sent back.
Interesting. Tony in Oxford, we'll give you a chance. Hi, Tony.
Hello. I have a question. This is a story I heard kind of, you know, probably fourth and fifth hand, so it may not be completely accurate. Just wanted to check it with you. A story goes that in central Wisconsin, there were some German prisoners of war working a farm, and they decided in summertime they were going to try to escape. And one of them got hold of a compass, and they knew if they went north and they went to Canada, they wouldn't get any sympathy there. But if they went south to Mexico, they could, potentially get away. Now, the story goes that they went for days and days and days at night and hid during the day in the woods and places like that. And they finally said, we got to be to Mexico. And they turned themselves in and found out they were in Indiana. the story then picks up that they were like just amazed. They said, no, we've walked for weeks and we have to be in Mexico. And the guy showed them a map of the U.S. and they were like, no country is this big.
Well, that's a good story, Bill. I don't know if there's a lot of truth to it, but...
Well, there were a lot of stories about escaping. Interestingly, early on, when this huge influx of prisoners occurred after the African defeat, the prison camps were so full that there were discipline problems, and the German prisoners were composed of two elements, the Nazis and then the regular soldiers, who were like our boys, just innocent and scripted guys. But the Nazi elements had control of the inside of some of the prison camps. They celebrated Hitler's birthday, they disciplined their fellow prisoners, and it was just an outrageous situation. And it was one that Eleanor Roosevelt found out about at a White House tea, and she prevailed on FDR to change this outrage. And so they isolated the Nazis into a camp down in Nebraska, and that kind of solved this absurd problem of the Nazis being in charge of our prison camps.
Well, you write about the two types of, and, you know, things happened. I mean, there were escapes, and you kind of write about that a little bit in the, you know, that's part of the story.
Sure. Yeah, there were actually in Barron, it was not a matter of escaping so much as it was just walking away. There was
a very lax sort of situation
prevailed. But at the end of there were escapes, successful ones. The most successful one was a guy who got to Chicago and became a businessman and lived out his life in Chicago, and it was just revealed like maybe 40 or 50 years after the war. But he was a rare exception. They were always caught.
Thank you, Tony, for calling. And let's go to Jan in Woodruff. Hi, Jan.
Good morning. I grew up in Sheboygan County, also a very German area. And there was a prisoner of war camp at the fairgrounds in Plymouth. We were farmers. They used to bring some of the POWs out for working on a pea vinery at a certain season. But the interesting thing is, we spoke German at home, And we were allowed to have some prisoners out to our home for dinner on occasion, and we made friends with some of them, corresponded with them for many years after the war. And I even have some gifts yet that they sent me from way back then. Yep. So that was different than some of the places I've read about where they were reviled instead of being befriended.
Thank you very much, Jan, for calling. And that certainly, and that comes up in your book as well. There's a dinner or two that you describe in the book.
Sure. As the caller points out, there was a great variation in the reaction. Most of it, however, was as she described.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Jan. I appreciate your call. You know, I want to go back to sort of the overall story, because we've talked about Billy a little bit, and we've mentioned Margaret, and here the book title is Margaret's War. You know, and I don't want you... There are some real surprises in the book. Also, it's very funny and spot. I mean, there were a couple of times that I just burst right out laughing when I, and some of the observations of Cy, I think, for sure. Talk a bit more about about the sort of how the book unfolds with Margaret.
Well, Margaret, as you described, it was married. Actually, I have had an aunt named Margaret who was married to an uncle, and she was a beautiful young woman, and as the reality of her loss and involvement unfolded, she just was too fragile to deal with it, intelligence and without emotion. And so between her and Billy and Cy, they devised an outrageous scheme to try to make some changes, even as far as changing the concept of war. And of course, it it was a little overly ambitious, but it was fun to write about.
Oh yeah, I don't want to give too much away here, so we won't go into a lot of detail. I'd rather have people just discover that for themselves, and I'm sure you would as well. It did involve Mrs. Roosevelt too.
Yes, so. It did. Actually, that's a true story about her.
It is
that she, this occasion of the Nazis being in charge of the camps, that is a true thing.
So when I was reading about one of the, I mentioned that I was laughing about Cy, and I thought, well, maybe this is maybe this part of this Cy is Bill himself. But then there was one point where you talk about Cy being a lawyer and having spent many years as a student at the University of Wisconsin. And I said, well, I remember a guy like that. When I was, those stories persisted about a guy who was here forever as a student.
They are all true. Cy was a great... He was a good friend. He was an outrageous guy, and just how you describe him, I got acquainted with him. He liked journalism, he liked writing, and he hung around the Congress Bar downtown Madison, which was the hangout for the journalists, the ne'er-do-well journalists like me, in any case. And Cy was just... he had this grant that would keep him in school as long as he would go to school, a grant from his parents. And he ultimately graduated from law school, and the university more or less threw him out because they were just tired of him. But he was a wonderful character to write about, and a lot of of what I have him doing in the book, he actually did. It's hard to believe, but he did.
Well, he actually figured out ways not to actually graduate so he could continue to receive his money from in the family. And he was here for 20 years, wasn't he? I mean,
he was here probably longer. He was from Viroqua, and after his parents were gone, I used to go through Viroqua once in a while and visit him. He would carry on a constant correspondence, with outrageous things like the answer to the robins eating the strawberries is to poison them, and things like that. But he was a delightful character to know and to write about.
Bill, it's such a pleasure to have you with us today. I thank you so much. And I hope you sell a million copies, and I hope they make a movie out of it. Thank you, Bill.
Thank you, Larry. I appreciate it.
Bill Stokes, again, go to BillStokesAuthor.com to learn about his readings and more about the book. And thank you for listening, and stay with us. Lots more in store here on the Ideas Network.